Welcome to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And joining us by phone is our first guest, Dr. Maria Caffrey. She is a research associate at the University of Colorado and the lead author of an interesting report that released just a short time ago titled Sea Level Rise and Storm Surge Projections for the National Park Service. Dr. Caffrey, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, we gave a little insight into what the study was about, but why don't you give us first a thumbnail sketch of the overall goals and objectives of the report?
Yeah, so this was a five-year project that I was the lead on, working with the National Park Service to provide sea level rise and storm surge projections for 118 coastal park units. As you said in your introduction, a large number of park units are on the coast, and so it's really important to be able to plan for potential future changes in those areas.
And so was this report motivated by the National Park Service? Was that a request that came from them, or was that something that you and your colleagues at the university initiated?
I would say it was a combination. So I was, back in 2012, a visiting scientist at the National Park Service. I had an office actually in a National Park Service office. And while I was there for my one-year visit, I really noticed a need for these sea level rise projections. And so I spoke to some people at the National Parks, and they totally agreed. They recognized that need, and so they funded this project.
So what units, locations did you look at?
Oh, my. It covers an incredibly large area. So there's obviously a lot in the lower 48, but we also included national park units in Hawaii, Guam, American Samoa, Alaska, Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, a really large and varied area for these projections, which presented its own kind of challenges because obviously there's so much going on environmentally, so much variety that you have to take into account.
Yeah, what was the time period that you considered with respect to, again, this is both sea level rise and storm surge projections?
Yeah, so this was for storm surge projections over the next century, so until 2100. You can get some of these projections regionally. There's various regional reports. But what we recognized was that there was a real need to have something that was across the board. There were so many regional parks, say the southeast region, for example, that might have some kind of regional report that's created by a local university. And they were using those in planning. But it's hard to compare those numbers that they were using for their region across the whole area because, of course, those reports are just compiled for a specific region. So that's why we really wanted to make sure we had something across the board that everybody could use so we could see exactly where each park stands in relation to each other.
And where did you get the data for, say, sea level rise?
So we used data from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change mm-hmm. Sea Level Rise Report. They have numbers that they've prepared for 2100 and 2050, and this is a report that's incredibly well-respected. It's prepared by the UN, and so we use those numbers as a starting point. But while those numbers are great, we also needed numbers for 2030, a much more closer time period, because mm-hmm. so many of these units are planning for the immediate future, things like really basic things like where do you place a dock or where do you put a bathhouse? It's nice to have a number for 2100 so we can imagine those far-off timescales to see exactly how high sea level rise will be. That will be quite dramatic. But in the short term, what do you plan for? So we downscaled them for 2030 so that we could start planning and start putting plans into action now rather than waiting for a time period like, say, 2050 or 2100.
I'm curious how much time you spent speaking with the folks that are currently working at these national parks about what it was they're experiencing now. And did that match up with kind of the predictions you were looking at?
I spoke to a variety of people. We also worked very closely with three parks in particular because we were helping them put together information for members of the public. We put together something called a wayside, which is, you know, those boards when you go into a visitor center explaining a particular subject. We worked with people at Jean Lafitte, Fire Island, and other places to put together waysides so that we could have something there. But then beyond those parks, it depended on individuals and what kind of issues they had. Occasionally, someone would reach out to me and ask for advice about, okay, I have this particular issue. This place is flooding. Do you think this is due to climate change or is this due to something else or something like that? So occasionally, I would talk to other parks. But it was really them coming to me rather than me going to them.
Got it. So the people that were sort of most interested or probably facing this most immediately were those that you ended up working with.
Exactly. Exactly.
So you're looking at, let's say, sea level rise's impacts not only on structures of the National Park Service, buildings, like you say, docks, lighthouses, et cetera, but also land masses in general, because lots of national parks are simply consist of shorelines and wetland systems, et cetera, correct?
Exactly. And actually, I mean, I was preparing the sea level rise and storm surge numbers, but I know that these numbers have already been taken by other academics that are working on related projects. For example, someone's working on the impact of sea level rise on turtles in the Florida area. And so she's using those numbers to put together her own estimates to turtle nests in the future, for example.
Hmm. Okay. So let's dig into some of the findings, because there's some interesting findings here. They're not all uniform, per se, depending on the location.
Yes. And as I said, it's really so varied. I mean, yes, we had to point to where are the high places, where are the low places. But I think you could go to pretty much anywhere in the country and pull apart a different story for that particular location, depending on its own unique geography. So, for example, this report showed that the Outer Banks are going to have the highest rate of sea level rise by the end of the century, which for some parts, particularly Cape Hatteras, those parks could be endangered. They could be almost entirely gone with that kind of sea level rise, and so that's very dramatic. But on the other end of the scale, you have parks in Alaska, for example, and particularly in the southeast region where we have changes in land movement. And so even though the numbers might not be particularly high for those particular Alaskan parks, there are going to be other effects that sea level rise is going to be a very important and critical component of, particularly things like melting permafrost, which creates this kind of soft, jelly-like soil in Alaska that can be incredibly easily eroded. So even though sea level rise might be rising very high in an area like the Outer Banks, even a very small amount of sea level rise could have a devastating effect on other parts of the country like Alaska.
So explain a little bit about why there's more sea level rise in some places than in others. Why would there be more at the Outer Banks than up in Alaska?
Yeah. So sea level rise is driven by a couple of things. One, of course, is melting ice from the land, making its way into the oceans, driving up the volume of water. But also you have something called thermal expansion. So as these waters warm in the future, that volume of water is going to respond to that as well. So depending on how the ocean currents work out, how that heating is distributed, there are going to be some areas that are going to see higher sea level rises than others. So that's why for an area like the Outer Banks, that's going to have a higher rise than somewhere like Alaska. The other component, of course, is what's happening with land movement. Unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to really get into the land movement component of this report, although I hope we get to it in the future. And that is, in the past, there used to be ice on the continent that created a huge amount of weight on your continent. And as it weighed down the continent, it suppressed the land level. Now that ice is going and the land levels are rising in response. So even as water levels are rising in response to an increase in volume of water, the land level is also moving, which can complicate these estimates a little bit.
That is incredible. Chris and I were talking about this a little bit before the show, and it's mind-blowing that an entire continent or portion of a continent could essentially float a little higher, could rise up.
Because of that much ice being melted.
Yeah. And we're talking tens of thousands of years ago that this ice was really loading down on the land. So it's moving gradually. But in parts, again, like Alaska, it's moving much more rapidly than in other places. Right now, we're seeing decreasing sea levels in particularly the southeast region of Alaska because that land level relative to the water level is rising so much quicker than the water level is rising. So it's like the water level can't keep up with the land movement.
Right, in Alaska.
What a strange situation.
Yeah.
But in other cases, like you say, in the southeast parts of the country where you have sea level rise leading to erosion, you have a double whammy, perhaps, going on.
Oh, absolutely. And so the United States is a tale of two extremes. I mean, in New Orleans, that area, they're seeing sea level rising at around 9 centimeters per year. Last time I checked the dry gauge out there.
Whoa.
Now, hold on. Hold on, Dr. Carey. 9 centimeters is roughly 3.5 inches.
Yes.
3.5 inches a year.
Yeah. Now, that's not entirely due to just sea level rise.
Right.
I mean, this is because it's on a delta, and so that swampy soil also creates an interesting dynamic right there. But that's a large amount of sea level rise for that location.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to Alaska, say around the Sitka area, where relative sea levels are decreasing at around 17 centimeters per year.
Whoa.
Whoa. That's even more astounding.
Yeah, much worse.
That's like 7 inches a year. Okay.
Exactly.
All right. So let's talk about, the most obvious example that I keep coming back to is and this happened back almost 20 years ago, is when along the Hatteras seashore, there was a lighthouse, famous lighthouse, that was actually moved back some half mile or mile inland to accommodate in some ways, the future sea level rise there. Are you seeing other examples of that where structures are being threatened? And, in this case, you can move a lighthouse, but you might not be able to move docks and buildings.
Yeah, there's certainly cases like that. Yeah, the example you're talking about actually cost $11 million to move that lighthouse.
That's a deal. Nowadays.
Yeah, it would cost a lot more to do that. But we have locations, particularly around Virginia, where you have, say, an archaeological site. And you have rising sea levels, which bring with it their own rising groundwater levels, even if the sea isn't there submerging it quite yet. It's going to be driving up the groundwater levels.
Mm-hmm.
And so that puts all of those buried archaeological artifacts at risk. And so I've been talking to people about, what do you do about that? Because in some cases with these archaeological sites, you don't want to necessarily dig them up and expose these things to the air if it's, say, a piece of material, because then you're going to start degrading those materials. They're going to start decomposing. So the plan previously had been to leave them in place and let them be, just be aware that they're there. But now with sea level rise and climate change, it's threatening those sites, and it's almost a race to protect those sites. I mean, we've already likely lost a lot of places. In Alaska, where I mentioned that it was eroding out very quickly, there are people able to just walk along the beach and pull out different Native American artifacts that are falling out of the soil each morning.
What?
And so it's important to think about how we're going to protect for those.
And sea level rise is obviously one important piece of this report, but there's also the research on the storm surges. So how does that factor in?
Yeah, so with sea level rise, that's obviously rising a little more slowly. So that's not quite such an urgent event to plan for, you know, you can spend a little more time thinking about what you're going to do. Whereas with a storm surge, that becomes really serious. That can happen overnight and just wipe out the site. With hurricanes like Hurricane Sandy, for example, when it struck New York, it created huge amounts of devastation. It knocked out docks and damaged equipment in parks, things like really important, valuable documents that were kept on a ground floor level of a park that never anticipated that they would ever be hit by a storm surge, were lost. And so that was something that would have been as simple as just moving the important and critical documents up to the second floor of the park. But, of course, that park never imagined they could be vulnerable to sea level rise and storm surge. So that's why they had never really planned for it. So that's why it's really important that we have this report so that people can start putting plans in place and thinking about, well, what would we do if we were struck by a storm surge overnight?
And are there certain areas of the country that are more vulnerable to, or certain parks that are more vulnerable to storm surge than others?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the southeast and the Gulf of Mexico area have had a lot of storm surges in the past. And so I think for those parks, they're already well aware of their vulnerability to storms. And so that's usually part of their planning documents, what they should do for that. But as you go up the eastern seaboard, they might not be thinking so much about this. As I mentioned, around the New York area, they weren't really anticipating as much that they would have a storm surge come through their park. So one thing that I flagged in my report was that the Washington, D.C. area also needs to plan more heavily for the impact of a storm surge. Historically speaking, Washington, D.C. has been struck by a Category 2 hurricane, and that was in the late 1800s. So that's kind of removed from institutional memory at this point, but it's certainly within the realm that a Category 2 storm surge could strike again. And with climate change warming the waters, it's the potential there for them to have an even more intense hurricane storm surge make its way up the river there, potentially even a hurricane Category 3.
And in addition to that, with going back to sea level rise, water tables rise with that. And so these buildings, structures in Washington, D.C., for example, also have to be mindful of that.
Yes, they do. They need to think about that really intensely as far as, you know, in some cases, this wouldn't even cost anything for what they're doing for their planning. They could simply move documents to a location that would be further away, that might be just a little bit higher up, so that they would be out of the range of danger. But in other cases, there are parks that are being really proactive about it, thinking about things like living shorelines or other structures that they can put in place to help buffer them against any kind of storm surge or sea level rise.
All right, we just have a few more minutes. What's next with respect to research on this topic?
Oh, I would love to be able to go forward on this and do some further research on what's happening with that land level component. That's certainly one area that is ripe for further exploration. Also, Guam and American Samoa have been reaching out a lot about the damage that they've been experiencing, and I have to admit that's so far in the Pacific that that's not somewhere that I routinely think about. I mean, how often do we think about the territories like that? So that's also an area that I'm overdue for exploring as well.
And Puerto Rico, too, speaking of things we don't think about.
Yes, as well. I mean, and of course, storm surge is just, the storm season is just around the corner. And so that will also provide some interesting challenges.
All right, Dr. Caffrey, you have my permission to start that research.
Strong support from
yes,
this green from, earth.
Yes, from this green earth to do that. I'm sure you're looking for additional support financially to do work like that, in the form of a grant or so.
Most definitely. Right now, that would be very welcome.
All right. Well, so where can people go to perhaps get a copy of this report, learn more about your work and the work you do?
Oh, you can get that information from my website, www.mariacaffrey.com.
Okay, that's Caffrey, Caffrey.
Correct.
Okay. Dr. Maria Caffrey, she is a research associate at the University of Colorado and lead author of the most recent report, Sea Level Rise and Storm Surge Projections for the National Park Service. Again, we want to thank you for taking the time to chat with us this morning on This Green Earth.
It's been wonderful talking to you. Thank you.
All right.